Oh, this is so great. Come on, let's bring it up upstairs. We're fighting for open access to the airwaves. And wherever we can't get open access to the airwaves, we want whoever is standing in our way to pay and pay and pay.
Yeah!
Thank you for your help, ladies. I appreciate that. All right, now I'll begin at the beginning here. Sorry. That's okay. That's all right. We're free-flowing tonight. So if we have demonstrated that sound is energy, and in fact, the whole electromagnetic spectrum, a couple of years ago, Prometheus asked me to find out what I could about something that was the buzz in Washington, which was something called spectrum reform. And of course, the first question we have to ask is, what's spectrum? Hello, what's that? And it's really just about who gets to use our airwaves and who doesn't, which is something we kind of already know. This is so exciting. God, who knew that community media could be so fun? And it's a little bit hilarious because I'm like calling up my grandma. I'm like, I need to go to Washington. I need a suit. Let's go to Kmart, you know, put on the lipstick and the heels and go down and sit and listen to a lot of guys. Yeah, a lot of white guys. It's funny. But, you know, a lot of times being the only woman in the room, listening to a bunch of guys talk about technology and the airwaves and, you know, all this kind of stuff, blah, 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 and money, and try to suss out what is going on with our airwaves, man, and why, after so many years of people like the people in this room fighting so hard just to have a little tiny voice, why we don't have more use of our own airwaves, for goodness sakes. And the hilarity of it is not just the fact that I'm a woman. I guess that's not really funny in itself. But I'm a mom. I was a teen mom. I grew up in housing projects in Scranton. Maybe somebody over here can take you down, okay? So I'm constantly upstaged by my own children. You know, being that I grew up in these housing projects, that my mom was a teen mom who grew up in those housing projects, that a lot of my family is still back there in Scranton. I've got cousins that are growing up there now. And when I heard about what the station that Steve referred to, Movano Kantakos Human Rights Radio, a little 5-watt station in Springfield, in Illinois, a little town in Illinois, a little project, just like the project I grew up in, 5 watts. I mean, think about it. Think about opening up your refrigerator and seeing a radio station that's serving an entire community, like this, like the little light bulb in your fridge, you know? And it just spoke to me because, I mean, if you think about it for a second, think about when I say, you know, project kids, what do you think? You know, be honest, what comes to your mind? Little black kids.
Poor.
What else?
Poor.
Okay, what's poor mean to you? What is poor? Drugs, okay. Anything else? Uninformed, uneducated. Powerless, right? And I could say, you know, a lot more. I mean, to me, yeah, who are poor people in this country? Sick people, old people, young people, right? Single families, right? That's consistent. And what we aren't, though, what I felt growing up, when I was growing up in my projects, is one thing I didn't feel was a sense of community. Even though we had so much in common, I didn't feel that at all. And when I heard about this radio station, it just spoke to my heart. And I just could not believe, I mean, it just made so much sense that people who are so marginalized and so on the fringe, to be able to have a voice and be able to talk to each other. And no, we don't need to talk to the whole world. You know, we just need to talk to each other. You know, we just need to say, hey, is it right that we can't paint our walls? You know, can't we put some flowers in front of our house? You know, what's wrong with that, right? I mean, just simple things that make people's lives better or don't. And yet we didn't have that opportunity. So when I heard about this, you know, that started to engage me with this whole movement that was happening around the same time. You know, partly because of people that were willing to take big risks. People like Mabano Kantako, who are out there on the front lines, who said, you know what, I'm gonna risk jail time, and I'm gonna risk getting a fine and whatever else comes, because you know what, we've got real things in our community and we need to deal with them. And we have real culture that we need to share with each other. It's not all bad stuff. You know, we've got some good things too, and we need to celebrate those, and we deserve it, and we don't need the FCC or anybody else stopping us. And because of heroes like that, people like myself, a whole generation of media activists, some of the people in this room that I recognize that got involved in this and got inspired by it, and a whole movement over the course, yeah, movements don't happen overnight. We just, you know, we just hear about them one day and we think we discovered them, right? From 1978, when we had the outlawing of little community radio stations, to 1988, when Mabano Kantaka gets things rolling for the rest of us. And then people coast to coast start picking up. And by the mid-90s, we had two things happening. We had this incredible, incredible consolidation of ownership on the radio. One day, everybody turned on the dial and heard exactly the same thing, no matter where they were. Then people said, well, where did that come from? Well, it came from the 1996 Telecommunications Act, all right? And this movement that had been, you know, sort of like fringe lunatics, you know, people on the margins, people with nothing to lose, all of a sudden, we started looking like heroes, you know, to regular folks. Yeah, see, we've been talking about this to you guys. We need our own radio, you know? And there started to be this kind of David and Goliath component. And some people said, let's engage with the FCC, let's try to get licenses, let's work the system, let's see what we can get. And guess what? You know, justice blinked, and we got thousands of radio stations, you know? And there's, Prometheus has been involved in building, what is it, 9 radio stations now in the States?
We've got 9 barn raising.
9 barn raising. So, you know, but there's lots of people all around the country that have been able to take advantage of this new LPFM service that's 5 years old because of people like the people in this room are engaging for several years, for like 20 years, to make this happen. So fast forward to 3 years ago, Prometheus asked me, you know, a little project girl to go down and sit with the big boys in Washington and find out what was going on down there. And, you know, we discovered some exciting things. We discovered, first of all, that people in places of power are really afraid of us. You know, they have a hard time admitting it, but they really are afraid of us. They're very afraid. They're afraid of the new technologies. They're afraid of community wireless. They're afraid of the power of municipal wireless and people having internet and using their airwaves for themselves. They're kind of shaking in their shoes. And you know, so there's been all this fluff about spectrum reform, blah, 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 spectrum reform. All right, and they keep telling us that we can't use the airwaves because the airwaves are too scarce. You know, there's kind of a mantra in Washington and a mantra among broadcasters that says, you know, the airwaves are a scarce resource. Spectrum is a scarce resource. You know, it has to be managed properly and we have to take care of it for you. Okay? Which brings me here tonight to talk to you guys about what the heck spectrum is. So I'm just gonna spend a couple of minutes introducing the fine world of the electromagnetic spectrum to you. And we started with this, right? The rubber band. All right? This is kind of like the most primitive transmitter known to man, right? I mean, it's a little sound transmitter. You put energy in, you get sound out. You know, it's great. Somewhere I have this other chart, which I can't show you now. Maybe we'll get it up here. But, you know, I mean, going back to high school physics class, you know, I don't know why. You know, it could be the intelligent designer. I don't know who came up with this idea. But energy travels in waves, all right? Energy travels in waves, all right? And there's sound waves, and there's light waves, and there's X-rays. You know, there's waves that we're familiar with and we have experience with because we've got special organs for them, all right? But energy travels in waves. And the difference between one wave and the next is nothing more than how long that wave is. That's it, all right? And there's crazy waves out there. There's waves that take up the whole diameter of the Earth just to have one cycle, all right? And then on the other side, you know, you get down to the subatomic level, and then things really get hairy because, like, there's waves that are so tiny, we can't even tell the difference between those waves and matter, you know? So that's kind of scary. But when we're talking about electromagnetic spectrum, and we're talking about spectrum reform, spectrum policy, why we can't use our own airwaves, We're just talking about the waves that we use to communicate with each other, right? That's it. Not the whole enchilada, just this little tiny sliver. And that sliver is waves that are between, waves that are longer than light, but shorter than sound. We call those radio waves. We call them radio waves because they can radiate well through space. Okay, they travel well through the air. All right? So, thanks, Hannah. Thanks for holding that up. Check this out. I got it at the Exploratorium. So, it's good art stuff. We call it, we like to think of it as the, they call it beachfront property. We call it the wavy rainbow. Okay? Because the rainbow analogy works. We experience light as a rainbow. I brought some crystals. I thought these were great because I got them at the grocery store, and they're also feng shui luck charms. And I have a volunteer that's going to hand them out and pass them around to you. So it should clear the energy in the room. So I'm told, but even not. I'm kidding a little bit here, a little bit. But we hold them up to the light and see. You know, just like experience this for yourself and how simple and magical like the world is, right? And how confusing it gets when it gets into the hands of politics, right? So just hold them up to the light and see. I've got five of them, so everybody's gonna get a chance to play.
Maybe someone should stand up so people in the back.
Yeah, you wanna stand up and see as people go? So all we're demonstrating here is when you put light through a crystal, what happens is that the light waves break up because yeah, you can move around. You don't have to stay still. I don't really care if you're paying attention to me or not. You know, it's like not that important to me. I'm used to it. Okay. So all we're seeing here, this is something that you've experienced a million times, right? But all we're showing here is that there's a band of energy that we call light. And that band is made up of a bunch of different waves that are close to each other and act kind of like each other, but act just enough different that when they hit an object, like a crystal, and they try to go through it, they do something a little different, and they act a little different, all right? And for our purposes, we fight over the ones that work really well for communicating. Like, that's all we're looking for, right? Now, there's a big difference between the waves that we're fighting for and the waves we want to use and the waves of nature. And that big difference is what I call the difference between surfing waves and radio waves, all right? Some people have this idea that there's like this eternal Britney Spears song that's playing from like the dawn of time. And like you just turn it on and you just happen to get it, right? Like always in the middle of the same Britney Spears song. You know, and that's not how it works. What is actually happening is nothing like what we experience in nature. We make these waves. Just like this, somebody made a box that sent out your favorite Britney Spears song, right? All right, so what are we talking about? We're really not talking about capturing nature. We're talking about whether or not, who gets to decide when you take that electrical socket and you plug in something to the 60 cycles of second per second of energy that comes through your plug in the wall, and then you plug it into some box, and that box is kind of like an amusement park for energy, and it goes through all these loop-de-loops and hoops, and comes out, and it's just a different frequency. It's just a different type of energy. You've just changed the way the energy is doing its thing, all right? So it's not like there's this, like, you know, eternal, like the eternal Britney Spears song, or like when you surf, and the wave's gonna be there whether you're there to hang 10 or not, all right? We're talking about who gets to manipulate boxes, basically. All right, it's a political choice. It's not really about the nature of energy or the nature of matter. It's more about, you know, who gets to make decisions about what kind of boxes we can play with and who gets to play with them. One of the things that really comes up a lot and is really confusing when you get into the circles in Washington, kind of the cloud, the fog that descends on your head, all right, is this whole notion of interference, and they're constantly throwing that at us. You know, we can't possibly let you have your own airwaves because that would interfere, you know, unfortunately. What they're really talking about, we all know what they're talking about. They're talking about interfering with their business model, right? We know that. We're talking about, like, oh my God, if you play a couple records for your neighbor, that's gonna shave off, you know, so much off our market share, and then we won't be able to charge as much, and I won't be able to get that extra BMW this year, you know? That's what they're talking about, but they don't say that. They say you're interfering with, you know, your technology is interfering with ours, and that's not good. All right? But here's how it works. So we've got a box that we call a transmitter, all right? The plug in the wall, you plug it in, out comes this energy that you're sending off. And just like you have the experience when you turn on your car radio that you tune your radio out, we tune transmitters. Hey, that's enough. This is a free-for-all, I love it. When we tune in the transmitter, it's just like falling in love, all right? There is all this background energy, all right? The transmitter is not paying any attention, you know, the receiver's not paying any attention to the light bulbs and the energy that's coming out of the light bulbs, not paying any attention to your brain waves, none of that. It's ignoring almost everything else. It's only sensitized, it's in tune with the energy that's coming out of the transmitter, all right? So it's just like falling in love, all right? Now, unfortunately, in like nearly a century of broadcasting history and radio technology, all right, all of the rules and all of the laws that govern us and our ability to use our own airwaves to talk to each other is basically governed around the clock radio, all right? So the cheapest, crappiest possible receiver that you can get, you know, the big broadcasters want to make sure that you can get Don Imus on it. Oh boy, if you can't. You know, and that's how they govern the whole thing, all right? But of course, even under old school technology, forget about computers, you know? I mean, obviously, the better your receiver, the less interference you're gonna have, right? So it's political. Wherever there's a rainbow, there's a pot of gold. I learned that on a TV commercial. So, just briefly running through the history of technology on the airwaves, 101 here. What we have is, you know, back about the 1860s, there was geeks geeking and tweakers tweaking, and people figured out that they could send out these energy in these boxes, and they could, you know, dot, dash, right? Morse code type of thing. There's noise, there's lack of noise. And the intelligence to interpret noise and lack of noise was up here in people's brains, right? And be like, oh, dot, dot, dash, dash, dot. Does anybody know some Morse code? Not one person here. Okay, no hands in the room, okay. There's a lot more I can say, but there's not a ham around to correct me. Okay. I'm just kidding. I love hams, I really do. Dots and dashes, intelligence up here. Now the interesting thing about that is that there was this, in this period of time, it was like a free-for-all, you know. People were playing, they were innovating. It was a lot like the internet has been, like the first like 10 years of the internet kind of thing, you know. People were seeing how far they could push the technology. You know, could they push it across the ocean to talk to each other? You know, you could talk to your neighbor or you could talk around the block, you know. People started playing with broadcasting, but then long about, you know, First World War or so, 1920s, people figured out that the geeks were geeking. Well, the schemers started scheming, all right? And people figured out how to change the waves, just kind of tweak the waves a little bit, just modify them slightly, and modify them in such a way that the transmitters and the receivers were still in tune with each other, but we could get voice and we could get music out of it, all right? And then later on, people developed what we call other kind of modulation schemes. All right, modulation schemes that allowed us to put pictures on there. And then, you know, fast forward through to the 1970s, and where were we back again at? Dots and dashes, right? Dots and dashes, because we're in the age of the digital, the age of the zero and the one, right? And 0 and 1, where's the intelligence now? You know, it's like we have little ham radio operators, little radio engineers, right inside of the boxes, all right? We're no longer interpreting the dots and dashes, but the dots and dashes are pictures or text or sound or, you know, any combination thereof. They could be dots and dashes if we wanted them to be that. That's fine too, right? Now, when it really gets interesting and when it really gets, you know, really like what really breaks it open is when we take the transmitter and we take the receiver and we put them together in one happy box with the computer chip and some software. And then we have what we call a smart radio, all right? And a smart radio is a radio that can do, that, I mean, the first time I heard it, I was like, that's obnoxious. I hate when people talk about machines like they're people. That drives me nuts, right? I hate that. But in fact, it is what the engineers are doing. They are trying to take, they took the kind of ways that the ham radio operators had come up with, the amateur radio operators had come up with, to talk to each other in a civil way, and they sort of put that in the software, all right? So you have devices that are trying to simulate what people do, which is share the airwaves in a polite way. So all of you guys are listening to me now, and that's kind of optional. That's your choice, right? You're making that choice right now. In a few minutes, you might decide to start screaming at me, all right? That's a choice. Those are rules that we make as people, all right? But now we have smart radios. All right, our radios are starting to behave a lot like we do. They can talk to each other, they can listen, they can share the airwaves in a very civil and nice way. And the result of that is we get buttloads more gold out of the same old wavy rainbow, okay? So spectrum hasn't changed since day one of creation or whatever, however you reckon it, like, you know, a billionth of a second after the Big Bang or whatever. But our ability to use it has changed radically, dramatically changed. As we've been able to, you know, geeks have been geeking and so forth for, you know, 150 years now. And these are just a couple of examples, and they're probably not even the best examples, but, you know, they were handy when I was making up these this flashy presentation. In 1960, the amount of airwaves that it took to have one television broadcast today could handle 10 of the same quality, all right? Digital conversion, we didn't choose to have 10, or the people that were on our behalf making decisions for us didn't choose to have 10, they chose 6, right? But they could have chosen 10, that was a political decision, but you can see that, you know, there's a lot more ability to have potentially, you know, CBS, NBC, whatever, could be broadcasting 9 more stations, you know, or they could have let us all have, you know, they could have let diminished their use of the airwaves by, you know, by a tenth and let in, you know, however, 9 more competitors for every station that they have, but I guess that didn't happen either. What really gets into the capacity, and like I said, where it really gets mind-blowing is not the old-fashioned broadcasting where you've got the big tower blasting out at you, but when we have these smart radio devices, like smart radio, one example is your cell phone. Okay, your cell phone's a computer with a transmitter and receiver in it, all right? You know, that's what your Wi-Fi box is if you use wireless internet, same thing. There's lots of other devices like this, like GPS, okay? There's lots of them that we can use now. In the 1940s, you could make a mobile phone call, all right? If you were, you know, I don't know who was around in that, I guess what, Roosevelt or something, you know, could have made a mobile phone call.
Or military people.
Yeah, military people, of course, were making mobile phone calls, I'm sure. Today, the same amount of airwaves that require one phone call today handle 100,000 simultaneous conversations. All right, 100,000. And if you look, and if you just look at the options, if you went down the menu of like, let's take all the engineering tricks that we've got and try to bang out the most buck and get the most amount of people using the airwaves as possible by, you know, if that was our goal, we could times that 100,000 by another 100,000, and I've done the math, that's a lot. That's a whole lot. It's not infinite. No, it's not. All right, but it's approaching that. I mean, it's approaching the point where you can say, yeah, we could all, you know, why do we have licenses? Why can't everybody in this room broadcast? You know, I mean, it really gets to that point. But that's not the point where we're at. We're at the point where we're told that spectrum is a scarce resource and we cannot have access to it. That's where we're at, right? But reviewing, spectrum is an infinite resource. The technology is orders of magnitude more advanced. So how do we get into this position of not being able to use our own airwaves? How did we get here? Another history review for you, just sort of one. Kind of paralleling the technology, a little bit of the history of the regulation. 1860, so the First World War, radio is unregulated, it's a playground. It's a playground for innovation. All kinds of people are doing all kinds of cool things on the radio. All right, it looks like the internet looks now, which should be a lesson to everybody, even if you don't care about radio. If you love your internet, you should be concerned about this. You should be looking at the history of what happened with radio, okay? Because it's very telling. First World War comes along. Oh my God, can you believe it? German spies could be talking to Germany using this radio stuff. We've got to get in there. We've got to start regulating. Holy cow. That could be trouble. All right? 1920s. Anybody know the history of progressive politics in this country? Knows? You know figure two. I see somebody here. 1920s. You know, people forget. I mean, I'm from Scranton, and I was shocked. Even though I have, you know, labor organizers and miners and all kinds of people in my background, you know, I was shocked to find out that there was tens of thousands of miners in Scranton who were part of the Socialist Party, just in Scranton. All right, this was huge. Progressive politics was big, big, big back then. Populism was big, all right? So was the Red Scare. This is the first Red Scare. This is the first mass deportations. This is like sending out the Emma Goldmans and all that kind of stuff, right? This time as well. So there was a very big concern, and there was talk. You know, you can decide, the historians can debate, but it was in play. Oh my God, what if populists use this new technology to, you know, stir up the masses? That would be terrible. We've got to stop this. All right? Now, Hannah brought up something today. We were teaching at RPI today. That's right. I'm name challenged. I'm like no proper nouns in my head ever. We were at RPI today, and she brought up something very interesting. The National Association of Broadcasters formed 10 years before the FCC even existed. 10 years. The broadcasting industry got its act together. They wrote the law, okay? We've been trying to change it for 70 years. They wrote the damn thing. They made the agency that regulates them, all right? 1934 Telecom Act comes in 10 years later, and it sets in stone the way that the airwaves are going to be used from now until today. It sets in stone AT&T, the monopoly system of landline communications, all right? Now, again, we can talk about all the wonderful innovations, and there's so many, and it's really cool, and I love new things, and I love toys, believe me. All right, that's all good. But, you know, it was a political choice that was made to have the broadcasting model. Big, giant broadcasting towers, one-to-many communication, licenses. Right? Licensed broadcasting. And what is a license? Okay, so we have three possibilities of using our airwaves in this country. There's three things that we can do. All right, there's three ways that the FCC can break it up. All right? And we can ignore it, but if we're some bureaucrat sitting at the FCC trying to figure out what are they doing with the airwaves in Troy, New York tonight? There would be three possibilities, all right? We could use the airwaves and with a license approved. Okay, we could be using the airwaves like this microphone right now. This is unlicensed, all right? Or we could be pirates, which we're not doing tonight. Whoever's listening. Basically, the broadcasting was the thing that was set in stone. All right. We talked about the fact that there's airwaves. Airwaves, you know, the radio waves can do things. They We like the waves that can travel across, you know, go through buildings, go through trees. We can listen to music in the basement, you know, and all that kind of stuff. You know, waves that have good propagation characteristics, we call it, right? We like those waves. And to get one of those waves that are the good ones, we need to be approved. And a license is issued to people, all right? A license says that Steve Pierce and only Steve Pierce is the only person that has the right to talk in this church, and nobody else. And if anybody else wants to talk, Steve, you have to negotiate with Steve Pierce. You have to buy him a latte, you have to give him a back massage, you have to do something for Steve. All right, and if you don't agree with that, and you don't like that, then too bad for you. All right, so licenses go to people. Now, there's another thing that the FCC has figured out, and that was, you know, there were still waves that, you know, they're kind of useful, they're not the best, they don't really, you know, like, waves that don't like rain, you know? I mean, that's not good for if you're a broadcaster and you've got to sell eyes to advertisers, you've got to sell ears to advertisers, you know, you can't have a rainy day and be like, well, you know, we couldn't put any of your ads on the air because they wouldn't get anywhere. Nobody wants that. You can't sell that. All right? So the waves that people thought were junk and total crap and the broadcasters never saw any use for whatsoever, they called those the junk bands. They said, well, you know what, let's make up this new thing. We'll call it unlicensed. And anybody that can figure out a way to use those airwaves can make a box, and that's fine. You just follow the rules and do the rules, and anybody, you don't need a license to use it. The device gets a license, and the device gets approved. And that's how we have cordless microphones, garage door openers. What else?
Baby monitors.
Air traffic control towers.
Oh, okay, they're probably licensed though. But there's other stuff that we use the airwaves for. But yeah, you know, things that basically people didn't think would ever be useful to forever, ever, ever for communication.
And if you turn over any of your devices, like your cell phone, you should see a little FCC symbol on it. It's actually a very unattractive piece of graphic design. If they need to update that. But that means that the FCC is certified as a device that they don't care who uses it, but you're allowed to use it on that little tiny bit of the band.
So, what about, I don't know, somewhere in the 90s, people were like, you know, it'd be really cool if we don't have to drill holes in these offices that we rent for our dot-com company that goes bust in like 6 months, and then we have to repair the wall or pay the damage. You know, let's have an air, let's like make a box that we can like hook up all of the computers in our room, in our little office, you know, and use the airwaves to do it instead of making all these wires for us to trip over. And, you know, I mean, basically nothing happens. Like, even emergency services, nothing useful happens at the FCC or Congress without, like, a nod from the broadcasters. But this time they blanked, all right? This time they didn't figure out what was going on. And somehow we got something that was tremendously useful, and it was a total accident, and that is called wireless internet. Yay, yay, yay. All right, I don't know. All right, it was a total accident. These things hit the street, and immediately there was this anarchic grassroots movement of people sharing internet with each other all over the world. And it was so cool because nobody, like, you know, said, we are going to have a grassroots movement that we're going to all share with each other. You know, it just happened spontaneously. Like, it's like a nice thing to share with your neighbors. And people got really into it, and this whole culture built up really fast wherever people were trying to get internet. And it was cool. And people, you know, and the geeks start geeking and the tweakers start tweaking and they start building out these things that were meant to do nothing more than have your printer over on this side of the room talk over to, you know, your computer on the other side of the room by the, you know, because you sit by the water cooler or whatever. And somehow, you know, and then towns were like, you know, cities and even countries are like, wow, we've been redlined, you know? They built all of these lines and they laid down all this fiber because, you know, the internet was all about like laying down all these big fiber optic wires everywhere, but they laid them all in the same places. So, you know, like all these companies that went bust because everybody thought the internet was about pipes and put all these lines in the ground, you know, and all the investors lost all their money. And everybody got sad, and there was a depression, and then Bush became president and we went to war, and it just got worse and worse. But, you know, it all started with this idea that you were going to make a billion by controlling these pipes and having that control, like, again, like the broadcasting model, right? Top-down control. And people that didn't have access to the internet, like whole entire communities and stuff, started getting together trying to push this thing as far as they could push it. And that's where we are now, you know? So what we're asking for, we think that community radio is great. And we would like every single community in the whole country, every civil society group, to have their own radio station. We would like Indie Media Sanctuary to have its own radio station, its own television station, its own printing station, whatever you guys want or need in your community. We would like you to have the power to provide that for yourselves, all right? We would love for the FCC to get out of the business of deciding who gets a license and who doesn't. We don't think that that's fair. Now, having said that, I think probably, you know, between you and me, getting rid of licensing is probably as likely as getting rid of capitalism. It's not going to happen anytime soon. Whether you like capitalism or not, it's not very likely that we're going to get rid of licensing. It's a cash cow, all right? For the people that have it, it's a cash cow that never stops giving. It's the golden egg, the hen that lays the golden egg, right?
The United States government plans to make, I think it's over $80 billion in the sale of the public spectrum.
Right. So we have these devices that could basically, you know, the technology is at that point where we could all be broadcasters and we could all be talking. We could be using the airwaves like the internet. But at the same time that there's that possibility that you know, they blinked and we have this opportunity to use the airwaves like the internet and push things in that direction, there's a lot of pushback from the telecoms and the broadcasters. I mean, we just used to it was simple. Like a couple years ago, all we had to do was worry about the broadcasters. Now we have to worry about fighting the telecoms too, all right, which is a little mind-boggling. But they're all looking at it and they're all going, oh God, you know, we make money from captive audiences and captive advertisers. How do we get everybody back in the box? You know? And it's a really scary time for them. And there's a little bit, you know, there's been some infighting and they're buying each other out and all that kind of stuff. You know, but there was a push, you know, and we're lucky, there was a push to absolutely, completely, 100% privatize the airwaves, all right? That's on the table as an option, all right? It's the essential thing of saying, like, Clear Channel can own the color green, AT&T gets the color blue, you know, and you know, people with blue eyes are really in trouble, right? But that's where we're at. These are the dynamics that are in play. So what we're asking for, and what our allies are asking for, and Hannah has the details, because I never got that paper back from you, by the way, with the bills. But, you know, there's three things that we think, three big things that we're looking to do. One is, you know, we're either going to get together as the media reform movement, and we're going to work together, and cable access is going to work with LPFM, and LPFM is going to work with people that have been working on, you know, universal access and things like that. We're either going to get together as a movement or we're going to be divided and conquered. You know, that's what's going to happen. They're going to pick us off one by one, you know? But our vision is this, open access to the airwaves, all right? And wherever we don't get open access and we don't have the ability to use the airwaves directly ourselves, we need to have really strong teeth put back in our public obligations, you know? If you've got a cable, company here who's not, I'm sorry, I'm laughing at you poor people in Troy. That's not nice. Because I know how hard you've worked for your cable access, all right? But we need to get teeth back. We need to get teeth back in our public obligations. You know, anybody that has an exclusive right to have the golden egg and is doing it at our expense and standing in our way, better give us something beautiful in return, right? And of course, look at this wonderful artwork. The wonderful people of the Media Sanctuary. We want to build our own. You know, this is what our answer is. Ownership is power, all right? The broadcasters have had control over airwaves for 70 years, all right? And possession may be 9/10 of the law, but we gotta work that 1/10. We gotta work it hard. So that's it. Do you guys want to talk? Do you guys want to have a discussion? Or do you want to watch the movie? Or what do you want to do now?
Nice question.
Movie. All right. It's a 20-minute movie, which really shows what Prometheus does. I think it'd be really valuable to watch it.
Would I actually make a recommendation that we do is I know a lot of people also want to finish building antennas. So maybe what we could do is like do talk about some questions now and also give people, and also I'm Hannah, hello. I just stole Dharma's microphone. And I don't want to watch the movie because I've seen it 400 times and I have the worst hair day I've ever had in my entire life in that movie and I don't want to see it. But
I didn't notice that until you said that though.
It's really, it's something to see. So you should all watch it. But we also, like Dharma was mentioning, there are actual things you can do right now to keep the airwaves that we, even that little sliver that we have, to like open it up a little bit so we can do things like build really innovative networks that connect our communities together when we don't actually have internet service or our own radio stations or our own television stations. So we could talk about what those bills are and what those rulemakings are that you can sign on to. And if anyone wants to talk a little bit also about low power FM radio, because the fight is totally not over for that, for trying to get 10 licenses available in the Albany area and the Troy area for people to build their own community radio stations too. We can also talk a little bit about that fight. I just wanted to give people some options too because I know it's also getting a little late. And then I'm going to be here until they kick me out, helping people build antennas so they can suddenly cut their internet bill in half and make a connection with their neighbors over wireless that they share using their own airwaves point to point. So does that sound like good stuff to do?
Do we see the movie?
The movie, yes, we can see the movie, but we're going to put it on after questions, is what we're saying, and then people can be free to make antennas while the movie's playing, if that is sensible.
Is that a democratic decision?
No, that was my totalitarian decision. See how we're now? The microphone, airwaves are power, man. Were you listening?
Where do we get a license to make that decision?
I can go either way, I don't care. What, you want to watch the movie?
Take a show of hands.
So, who wants to watch the movie right now? Now! There's a lot of people ready to watch the movie. Okay, great. We'll be here to talk to you, and we'll be around. I live in Woodstock, so you can call me up and yell at me about how your radio sucks.
So we'll show the film. If people are desperate to do antennas while the film's on, handouts available, do that. We'll take questions afterwards. I think you'll get a much better sense of what people can do working together after you watch them build Radio Free Nashville. If people do wander out, though, I just wanted to say something I should have said at the beginning, which is that there's a schedule of upcoming events, which includes Bread and Puppet Theater next Wednesday, and a lot of great stuff, including the African Roots and Branches Festival, which is starting. So there's two, which is starting in April. So there's two flyers at the back. There's a sign-up sheet to give us your email, and there's a jar to throw some money in so we can help pay the Prometheus folks for their trip up here. So all that and more.
The idea is that we bring together a whole lot of people that want to learn radio skills or that already know radio skills and like to teach them. And now I've got to make a little confession. This here, what's going on exactly right now, it's not exactly the most efficient way of building a radio station. But we do barn raisings instead because we think that it's very important that the technology behind radio be demystified. Because considering the kind of government that we have, we think it's good for as many good people to know how to make radio stations as possible. I introduce Cindy Welsh.
I'm responsible for all good things happening this weekend. I'm not responsible for the weather. It's been one long, hard battle, but we're here. We won, and I'm so glad that you're all with us. Yay! On the weekend for you. I really apologize about the rain, but you know it'll give you a story to tell you today.
It's a lot of rain. We should have known. It's not in the forecast. We're so hopeful. What can you do?
We're shaking like crazy trying to cut table legs for the console in the studio so we can get the, office and everything set up and start getting some equipment plugged in, hopefully sometime today or maybe tomorrow. So.
The console is going to face this direction and sort of be set down into the table so that people can see between the production studio and the on-air studio.
Social change, media activism. There's also an incredible news production track going on. There's people from Pacifica and Free Speech Radio News and all kinds of independent radio production teams are teaching brand new reporters how to take a microphone and a mini disc and get the local news out into their community, from that community, how to edit it and produce a piece on the radio that'll wake people up to things they're not hearing anywhere else. It's an incredible track. There's all kinds of wonderful, really deep technical tracks where people from novices to advanced folks can learn all about how audio works, how to physically build a transmitter, how to tune an antenna, how to make sure that a station, once it's on the air, can really be in the hands of the community that is broadcasting on it, that really owns it together. The reason that we have barn raisings, as Pete always says it is, it's not because getting 150 people to sleep in the mud and hold a soldering iron that they've never held before. That's not the most efficient way to build a radio station, but it is the most efficient way to build this movement for democratic media owned and controlled by communities. And so when we build these stations, what we're doing is we're creating experts in the power of this radio, not just in terms of building it and then celebrating it, but also in terms of convincing legislators and regulators, people in Congress, people at the FCC, that this service is important, that this is something which is the backbone of the responsibility that they have to us in the United States.
Radio Free Nashville started back in 1997 as a direct response to the Telecommunications Act of 1996. There was a group of us who were really concerned about what the media consolidation that the Telecommunications Act sanctioned was going to do to not only our community, but this country in general.
We met Free Radio Nashville, or Radio Free Nashville, when we went on the road in advance of and in 2000 to try to really raise the alarm and sound the cry that communities who had been excised from the airwaves, who hadn't had any outlet to tell their stories or to hear each other speak, were about to get this opportunity to do so, because we were fighting to get this service, Low Power FM, 100-watt community radio established at the FCC, for them to give out licenses free and clear to organizations all over the country.
So we applied for the license, and lo and behold, one day in the mail came our construction firm, and we about dropped dead. And of course, very naively, we thought that meant, oh gee, we're going to be on the air in 2 months. Woo-hoo, no problem at all. Not long after that, we got a petition to deny from a station here. We are in co-adjacency with WANT and Lebanon. And had to fight that again. More money, more lawyer fees, more engineering things to respond to this.
Prometheus worked with them and the tireless organizers of Radio Free Nashville to get another application in, get it reinstated, and get that construction permit. And so it's been like a really long time, over 5 years, that we've been working with this organization to finally get the airwaves free. And every possible thing that could have screwed us up happened. I mean, everything.
I was tearing my hair out. I'm thinking, a barn raising? What the hell am I doing a barn raising? How stupid is this? Why does anybody do this? This is just crazy. It was a long struggle from the very beginning. A lot of support from people in the community, though, that really, really kept this going. Even when we were playing that game of hurry up and wait with the FCC, and there was no tangible progress, when you're asking people to help pay lawyer bills and engineering bills, when you're not a nonprofit, when you don't have a radio station, you don't know if you're going to have a radio station. People were just, they always stepped up to the plate when they needed to, and that made a huge difference. And now with barn raising, it's great. I mean, just to see people coming from around the country and helping us do this, and people who believe in the same things that we believe in, and why this is important, and who want to see us succeed, it's really overwhelming. You know, nothing can phase us anymore. Nothing's going to stop us. Nothing's going to stop LPFM, man. We're here.
My name's Doug. I live in East Nashville.
Mode, and we have audio in it, and now we're just trying to improve the sound by messing with the knobs on a couple different things.
We all have receivers that certainly do not, like radio receivers in our cars, in our houses,
right,
that don't pull the internet off the air.
Right.
Don't
not
pull
there
the,
yet.
Not there yet.
Will we be there soon?
There's definitely, well, first of all, like all of the stations that you listen to today are going digital, meaning that they've all bought really expensive transmitters for a receiving system that no one owns yet. Like to buy a digital radio that will get the digital signal off of the FM dial costs about $300 to $400 now. And very, very few people have them. But almost every radio station, especially big ones, are going digital. So the people who are currently making the content that they give to you in exchange for all the advertising you have to listen to really, really want to use technologies which are more efficient, like digital broadcasting, in order to be able to sell you more things. And so that's happening right now. In terms of internet broadcasting, I'll probably, actually it'd be great if Tom talked a little bit about that, because with Free 103.9 is actually a lot more of an expert than we
are.
We're
actually web streaming this now, right?
Web streaming it live. But like, for example, a lot of community groups, especially in big cities, where low power FM hasn't been permitted by the FCC, like places like Chicago, where they're like, there's no room on the air for you to have your own radio station. We're working with a group there called WNLO, which is North Lawndale Online. This group, it's a couple of activists who have been working with youth in schools in the western part of Chicago in North Lawndale on public speaking and advocacy skills. And they're building a community radio station with that youth, with those youth, that's going to use a wireless network that's being built by a group called the Center for Neighborhood Technology all across North Lawndale. And so, simultaneously, as those nodes go up on people's houses, as people put wireless antennas on their roofs and share this internet with each other, getting stronger and stronger, the more I had some celery and now I'm like burping. It's very exciting. The more antennas that go up, simultaneously, North Lawndale Online is starting to help people make their own stories, collect content. So when they go onto this computer and they get this information, they're also getting connected to their community, just like with the community radio station. What we don't have yet in our hands is a smart radio, just like what Dharma was describing, that can find content and find connectivity on whatever kind of broadcast airwave seems to be available at the time, meaning FM in some cases, AM in some cases, maybe meaning using like 802.11b or 2.4 gigahertz in other cases. But we will get to that place where turning your knob on your internet radio is just as easy as turning your knob on your FM radio.
But do we even need smart radios if we have smart laptops? Mm-hmm. You already have.
Well, they're expensive.
Yeah, I can listen to any number of radio stations now mm-hmm. on my laptop. Then right. I have my own website
so
and stuff.
You could. But one of the things about this is that most people in the world don't have the internet.
True, and
well, mm-hmm, no, it's not. No.
There's actually a bigger issue here, though, in that if with broadcast, you have one signal that any number of radios can attach to. On the internet, you need more bandwidth the more people are listening to. So
Dharma was talking to that you can go into a thrift store and buy a radio for $1, and to listen to this internet station right now, you have to pay at least $2,000 in equipment.
Well, but more importantly, the people who are putting up the internet radio station, the more popular they are, the more service they have to buy, which is a technical limitation that's very costly, because you need to create more bandwidth for more people to be able to hear you, versus an over-the-air broadcast to puts up one signal and anybody can attach to that. And that's a limiting factor for internet right now.
Okay, well, this is an excellent thing. And I'm glad you brought it up. Why isn't the internet just better than radio? And that's one of the reasons why I have the hand-drawn slideshow, because I'm not about new and fancy. I'm about it, whatever is appropriate for people, whatever appropriate for community. You know, when we set up stations for like we did in Immokalee, Florida, we were privileged to help set up a station for a group of migrant farm workers who have come from all over Central and South America to pick fruit for us and pick tomatoes and oranges for us to have orange juice and tomatoes for the whole country. And, some of them, Spanish is the second language. A lot of them don't speak English at all. All right? Some of them don't speak Spanish. When we're talking about people speaking dozens of languages, a lot of them don't read. You know, internet doesn't work very well for people that have low literacy or low literacy. And of course, we're talking about migrants, so they don't have homes. You know, so it's not appropriate. Well, the kind of stuff that we have that we call the internet is not appropriate for them. But a radio station works wonders. You know, Hannah was telling a story today that I hadn't heard before about how these migrants were drafted into doing Katrina cleanup work. Was it Katrina? One of the hurricanes. And weren't paid by the contractor, you know, and the radio station made a difference. They were able to have a public meeting on the radio station, you know, and suddenly the contractor comes up with $56,000, you know, to pay. So that makes a huge difference in that community. Now, there's a couple of things about, you know, the technology around smart radios that I want to like point out. I mean, one of the things is that, yeah, everything's going digital, all right? But not everything going digital is going digital good, all right? Not everything goes digital in the same way, all right? For example, the FM modulation scheme for digital, the rules around the FM digital transition use a proprietary protocol. Somebody owns the intellectual property rights around that digital conversion for FM. That's why those boxes are $400 a piece. That's why that stuff isn't deploying, all right? And it puts us in a holding pattern. It puts the little guys like us in a big jam. Because how, if everybody does start using digital FM, what does that do to the little mom and pop low power stations? It makes it a lot harder for us to make that transition when the station that owns the intellectual property rights around it
is cross-owned by Clear Channel, all right, which it is. So that's a problem. Not all the digital is the same. That's why the keyword is open, all right? We need open protocols, we need open software, we need open airwaves. We need a level playing field with people. And that's what's gonna propel us to have something like the thing that you're talking about, something that's affordable and accessible and gonna be available for everybody. There's a whole bunch of people that wanna talk.
How do we answer those people who say there's not enough room on the different frequencies? They say you're gonna interfere mm-hmm. and therefore you can't have the license. What's our answer to that? Do we have any studies, and I mean, how do we answer these uh-huh. folks?
There's a lot of information that we can give to you. We're lucky, we're really blessed that there's one independent think tank in Washington that has taken on the whole terrible sellout of radio and has done tremendous public education work. I have a couple of these guides that the New America Foundation has put out on spectrum policy that shows how the big broadcasters have just totally run the show as far as the airwaves go. And this will help you out a lot. There's also, I don't know if, this is called the Citizen's Guide to the Airwaves. There's a map here. And this is the explanation for the map. I also have the cartoon guide to spectrum policy here. These are all from New America. You can all get this on spectrumpolicy.org.
What's the name of the organization?
New America Foundation. Okay? And, you know, it's just really two people. I mean, it's two people that were like, God, you know, we're getting totally shafted here. This is nuts. You know, and are just really devoted to trying to raise awareness about the fact that the airwaves are, you know, all the little intricate details of how the airwaves have been hijacked. They've gotten really deep into it. And they have, and one of the things that they have, and I don't have a copy of that handy, is the future of unlicensed. So they talk about, they've gotten economists, and they've gotten technology experts, and they've gotten all these people together to write about how we could have an unlicensed regime where we had an open playing field, and what are the key intellectual property issues, and all these other issues that come to bear on that. They bring that in. And it's a great public service to us. And we wouldn't be able to do that work without them, their work, because we're certainly building on that. The other thing is that's a really good place to find out about how the key technologies that solve some of the problems, like you're talking about the bandwidth issues on airwaves, is just at the FCC itself. There's on the FCC website, they have what they call NPRMs, which are Notice of Proposed Rulemakings. They had one, they're so obnoxious. They don't call it smart radio, they call it cognitive radio. I think some defense contractor probably came up with that to add a couple of zeros to the end of their budget, exactly. It's not smart, it's cognitive. And so it probably was smart on their part. But there's in that NPRM, there's actually about 5 to 7 pages that just catalog all the different ways, all the different like engineering tricks that we could use to get more people using the airwaves if we wanted. And it also has some really golden gems that the broadcasters have put in there. You know, that they're like wonderful ideas about how this stuff could be used. So I recommend that. I think that we'll probably have to go and encrypt some of that stuff and make it available to bring to presentations, but this is only our second time doing this talk, so.
You guys are doing a wonderful job. I mean, fantastic job. What you've done, you know, you're fighting tooth and nail for this much bandwidth. And that's phenomenal. That's a great thing. But all the rest of the bandwidth has been basically legislated away. We no longer have control over it. The internet right now is where radio was 80 years ago. The internet now is about as free and open and as available to the masses as radio was 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. There are such huge threats right now to the internet, mm-hmm. to restrict people's access to it. Mm-hmm. Are you guys throwing weight now as much behind internet initiatives as radio initiatives, or are you gonna do sort of staying with the radio frequency war.
Can I take that one back?
Yeah, I want to. I'll take the first part of that. You can take the net neutrality and all that good stuff. The first part, the first thing that you said was, I'm spacing out. Maybe you should take net neutrality.
Well, that's a really good point, basically, is that there's not a lot left to be won on the FM dial. That's like really important. We're going to get every last scrap that we possibly can, because every community that has a station won't say that that scrap isn't valuable to them because of examples like the one that Dharma brought up. So, which is why we do work on radio, because it remains the most appropriate for technology for most communities. They immediately understand how it works, how they can listen to it, and how they can make it. And so through that organizing, that's how we get to the place where people can start to talk about other technologies. And rather than defending a last scrap at a last stand, they can have an offense to go to a new place with a new stand. But you are definitely in the minority in someone who understands that the freedom that we currently have to communicate with anyone in this room over the internet, and to make sure that the content that we make has just as fair a shake, just as fair a chance for anyone to see over the internet as the content that DARPA makes or the content that the News Corporation makes, at least in the infrastructure, right? In the actual structure of the internet, we won't even get to the place where people, you know, they read in Philadelphia, they read the Philadelphia Inquirer, so they go to the Philadelphia Inquirer online, they watch NBC, so they go to NBC online. That's another kind of consolidation, another kind of focus that's more about people's mindsets than it is about the actual infrastructure of the internet. But what you are bringing up is that the infrastructure of the internet actually is at risk. And that's really, and Dharma would like to talk about that.
You fell into my tricky scheme. I said, well, wait a minute, all the good stuff's gone. And you know what? It's sort of tied up, but we do have a push. You know, people at the New America Foundation who are sitting in on those meetings with the suits all the time think that we have a chance to get the TV ban back and use the TV ban. How many people watch television here? Don't be shy. Admit it if you do. Okay, that's cool. That's great. I watch it every day. I love Democracy Now. I got broadband. I sold out on broadband so I could watch Democracy Now. But how many people get their television through an antenna? Okay. Because the broadcasters hold hostage the best. The TV band is the prime airwaves, and almost no one, you know, except for a few, you know, there's a few everywhere, but very small minority of people are getting their television using the television bands. And even in these areas, we could expand on LifeSense, like, you know, wherever you guys are using, even if you were like, no, I must have, you know, NBC, and I don't care about the internet, and I don't, you know, like, even if you were, like, totally, like, somehow attached to technology that's, like, you know, 50 years old, we could still just take the stuff that's unused in your market and do amazing things with it, right? Because the stuff that our community wireless is based on is the crap. They gave us the junkiest stuff, and they never thought we'd do anything with it, and we surprised them. We came back and bit them in the butt. But, you know, there's a chance that we could get that stuff back. And Hannah has the sheet somewhere that has the exact bills we could be asking for our congressman. We could be talking to our legislators about to ask for that stuff back.
Well, I really have a question. I just want to say that it's been a revelation to me, because I know the term appropriate technology, but I'm raised on a certain system, and it never occurred to me what decentralized information and machines that are not built the way we build machines today for a standardized use for a lot of people. I think focus on the internet here is part of that. I mean, it's a great, wonderful thing, but I think the computer myself is an extremely complex object, very fragile, very clunky, it's very centralized. So you're saying the radio waves do things that the computer and the internet doesn't do. And what has been astonishing to me is the idea of having broadcasts that go to different areas that are only heard by a small group of people and deal with what they're interested in. And that is a revolutionary idea for the use of technology. I don't think it's a new one, but I've never heard it applied to communication the way you've done it today. So I think that's what I've learned. Appropriate technology really means decentralized technology, not coming from a central source and not going to a large body of people the same way. Well, thank you for that.
And when you first started, you said there were 6 to 8 possible sites in this area for low-power radio stations. How did that number come about?
That's, and 6 to 8 is a guess, like, because I actually wasn't here, like, taking a look at the engineering studies that were done for the entire country saying that there were room. But based on the population of Albany, of this area, and, like, sort of the terrain of it, you can talk to someone like Steve, who was around, like, living here when low-power FM licenses were available. But basically, the way to think about it is every big city in the United States besides New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles would, under the initial rules that were put forward at the FCC for low-power FM radio stations, meaning there's tons of room, like, there's this much room on the dial for your quarter-sized radio station in a world where most of the radio stations are the size of coffee cans, basically, if you think about it that way, there would have been room for 6 quarters in between all of the different coffee cans serving this metro area, let's say. That's a guess. Like, again, we can find the closer number. But when the National Association of Broadcasters, which, as Dharma was saying, was established 10 years before the FCC, so they made up all the rules which the FCC would abide by when it was setting up how radio stations would be allocated. When they found out that we were going to be building thousands of stations around the country, they were so scared about what real community radio would sound like that they claimed that we would interfere with them, that our quarter-sized stations would interfere with their coffee can-sized stations. So the coffee cans all decided that they were going to set up, like, if we're talking about it on this scale, and a quarter is, let's say, about 1 inch wide, they were going to set up a 2-inch or a 3-inch barrier around their coffee cans where they would look all cagey, and no quarters were allowed to pass, basically, around those coffee can barriers, all the blankets around the coffee cans or something like that. And so what we're trying to say is that there's and you were asking about a question, what do we do when we say the airwaves, if someone says the airwaves are scarce to us? What we say is that actually technology has advanced since the time when there really was a chance of interference, when you couldn't control an FM broadcast well enough to keep it from drifting around on the dial, right? Now you can control it to a T. This is an extremely well-understood technology. And we have a $2.2 million study that was conducted by a big defense contractor. And there's no one I trust more than a defense contractor. But the government sure trusts them, and it was called the MITRE Corporation. And that study proved, beyond the shadow of a doubt, right, Quinn? That's right, that there was plenty of room for tons of quarters hugging our coffee cans and proving to everyone that coffee can radio sounds really crappy. Take your coffee cans home, think a little bit about that. But at any rate, so if you want to find out a little bit more about if the FCC, if they relaxed the rules, if Congress gave them permission to relax the rules and allow more radio stations at the clicks on the dial that are currently restricted from you building a radio station, you can go to a website called RecNet. That's RECNET. I think it's either .net or .com.
I think it's
recnet.net, and they have a channel finder tool that will help you. You can plug in a few different criteria based on the different rules that the FCC is considering right now about like how they can adjust the low power FM band a little bit and the rules. And if a certain set of rules was put into play, would there be room for a station in Troy? And chances are, probably. Chances are there would be. So.
And that's still stuck at the Power Committee?
Yeah, let me talk a little bit about those bills really quick.
You said recnet.com?
RECNET.net.
.net.
So just like we were saying before, the restrictions for low-power FM aren't at the FCC. The National Association of Broadcasters tried to prove to the FCC with literally a fake CD, like Steve was saying, filled with fake interference that would fill up the dial if a low-power FM went on the air 3 clicks away on the dial from a 100,000-watt flamethrower. And so Congress, which obviously listens to big commercial broadcasters because they pay for them to get into office, right? They're some of the biggest donors to campaigns, right? Congress said, well, we're going to set up this protection barrier just like I described. There are 2 bills in Congress right now that if they were passed, if they were changed into law, there would be thousands of radio stations released to the American public. One of those bills is Senate Bill 312, that's 312, That was sponsored by John McCain and Patrick Leahy, so it's a bipartisan bill. And so what you want to do is you want to call up your senators, right? You want to call them and say, I would like you to co-sponsor Senate Bill 312 and bring community radio to my town, to my church, to my school, right? There's also a House bill that was put forward by Louise Slaughter, who is a very, very progressive congresswoman from Rochester and Buffalo, where I'm from. And she put forward a bill called House Bill 3731. If that bill was passed, it would do the same thing. Plus, it would give some really important protections to low-power FM stations that are under threat of being knocked off the air by a clear channel station or any big full-power station if it decides to move its transmitter 50 kilometers, 60 kilometers to the east or west. And so you want to call up your congressperson and ask them to co-sponsor that as well. Another thing that you can do is that at the FCC, there's actually asking everyone in America, isn't that right, Quinn? Yes, Quinn knows all about this, I have to say. She's super, yes, you are a super genius. Okay, so there's a rulemaking at the FCC where they're asking questions of us, of people just like us, about how can we, as the FCC, set up rules that make it easier for low-power FM to survive and thrive. Now, with three Republican commissioners and two Democrats who both are relatively powerless right now, except to like kind of spur on a lot of energy, it's going to be difficult to get a lot of those changes that we're asking for, like protecting stations from being encroached upon by like a big clear channel station. If there's a distant station in your community that's fed by satellite from like 3,000 miles away, like a 250-watt translator broadcasting like Focus on the Family or something like that, and there's a real local community group that wants that frequency, can they have primary status? Can they get first choice? Those are some of the things that are being asked about. So if you want to comment on that, you can go to our website, which is PrometheusRadio.org, or FCC.gov, that's .gov, /LPFM, and you can file comments on the docket. And the docket is 99-25. But if you go to PrometheusRadio.org, all of that is there. You don't have to remember anything. It's late. You're all digesting delicious organic rice, you know. It's hard to remember stuff.
FCC.gov/LPFM
or PrometheusRadio.org. Anyone else have another question? We also have Cantenas.
The low-power AM bill, is that gone anywhere? Or not bill, but...
Low-power AM. Tom, is that... So there is a number of people who really are excited about establishing a low-power AM service. Prometheus, after like taking a lot of time looking at it, decided that we wouldn't really take a position on it because we have some technical questions about how it would work. But the FCC put forward another rulemaking, just like the one I was just describing, about whether or not we can get 100-watt AM stations. So if you're interested in that, you can also go to FCC.gov, and if you can like go to the Media Bureau section, you can find the rulemaking on low-power AM. And if you want a low-power AM station, you can put comment there, but that one isn't moving as far as I know.
I'm wondering about how the Christian stations stand on all these issues. Do they want to see deregulation? Do they want to get in on low-power?
That's a great question. It's actually, the Christian community is just as diverse as any community out there, really, and Prometheus has had lots of conversations with low-power church broadcasters that might say a lot of things that I personally disagree with, like some of their different viewpoints, but they have local independent stations. They agree with Prometheus and with a lot of the other stations we work with that a local station is a lot better than a station that gets its signal off of a satellite and only, and is just sitting, it's just a box in the middle of a gopher field, basically.
So they're in favor.
It's hard to make like a vast sort of assumption about it. There's a group called Christian Community Broadcasters, which works specifically with Christian low-power stations. And there's a number of individual Christian stations, low-power and full-power, that really support low-power FM, both in the U.S. and around the world. The National Religious Broadcasters, which is kind of like the National Association of Broadcasters for Christian stations, we've talked a couple of times with their board of directors chair and with their president, Frank Wright, who feel like, and National Religious Broadcasters has a lot of low-power FMs that are members. And so they're hearing a lot from their own membership that low-power FM is something really good. So what we're seeing is kind of a sort of a ripening excitement about more local outlets, more service in these different communities. So Prometheus has met a number of times with Christian groups, not because we necessarily want to work directly with them, because we only work on secular projects, and there's another group out there that works directly with Christian stations, but because we have common cause in getting Congress to expand low power FM and in getting the FCC to protect the service.
So what would you see as the best possible model for expanding and sort of developing low power FM?
In the United States? Well, the best model would be as if the FCC didn't exist at all, and, you know, and we could just, you know, Steve, do you have any copper pipe at your house?
Yeah.
Okay, and I have a circuit board. Okay, and then we would just, you know, that. But that's not going to, just like Donna was saying, like, we can do that, but there are risks associated with that. It's not that we're against pirates. We came from the pirate movement. We think it's, like, a place of real education and revolution, but, you know, immigrant community from Laos cannot necessarily have a pirate station if some of their legal status is in question. That puts them at risk, you know? The Immokalee workers who are trying to organize publicly cannot have a pirate station. So if we've decided, if we've come to some consensus that there's a reason for working inside the system, if you want to read all of the different things that right now we want from the FCC to protect and expand the low power FM service, you can go to prometheusradio.org and download a document called 14 and a half ways. It's 14 and a half ways the FCC can protect low power FM and expand it. But what we really want are just some of the things that we've been describing. We want to make sure that we don't get knocked off the air by big full power stations who want to just barrel through. We want to make sure that we have more than 18 months once we get a piece of paper from the FCC, a construction permit, to actually get on air, because I don't know about you guys, but it takes a long time to raise money to build an institution like this, right? And now, and people burn out, they have kids, they get like Fulbright scholarships, they, you know, go backpacking through South America, then, you know, you have to get new organizers in. And so if we're gonna be building stations that are based on volunteer energy, we need 3 years. We don't need just 18 months to do that. And so those are some of the things that we're asking for. But really, the reason we care about radio, just like we've been saying, is that it is an appropriate technology for communities to connect to each other. So the real ideal thing that we want are more institutions like this, like the Sanctuary for Independent Media, more independent media centers in general, more access to stations like WRPI, stronger access for communities to stations like WRPI. And just like, basically what we want is what I think Bob McChesney says all the time, which is what we want media to be everybody's second issue. If they care about social justice, in any sense, if they care about AIDS rights, like immigration rights, poverty rights, in order for them to be successful in their struggle, they need to have access to media that they own, that they control, and that is open to anyone who wants to use it, right? So, do you have anything you want to add to that? Maybe this is going to be the last question, and then we can like get to working a little bit on the cantennas and packing up.
So if anybody wants to talk more, we'll just take a huddle and go in the other room and things like that. But also, the mailing list is in the other room. So if you're interested in any of these issues and you want to keep in touch with us, then please, you know, sign up. We've got lots of lists, and we love to keep in touch with people.
And also, just to let you know, like, if you're building a cantenna, it's cost us like about $5 for a cantenna to get all the components, so it'd be great if you could toss a few bucks in the jar over there, just because, you know, we're extremely rich and make tons of money, of course, and so, but we just want to take it from you, too. So.
And whoever has the last heart, will you please give it back?
Oh, and one more thing. We're building a station in Southern Oregon, August 18th through 20th, with another farm worker organization called the Piñeros y Campesinos Unidos de Noroeste, the Northwestern Farm Workers Association, and everyone's invited out there. It's like, it's really, just what you saw in that video, hopefully won't rain like that, but really, it's you'll never forget what it's like to put a radio station on the air with like 200 of your closest friends, right? So.
I don't need that. You'll handle it fine.
No, it's hard.
Could you describe the process and the cost of what was going on in that video?
I'll
give you like a 10-second version. It costs usually between, like, they had a lot of struggles. You said they got a petition to deny against them. They actually ended up having to move their tower location. So it's usually you can put a station on the air between $10,000 and $20,000, which is a reasonable amount of money for a whole community to raise over the course of like 2 or 3 years, right? And it's a free license. You don't actually have to pay for the license at all. You do have to like wait for a 5-day window when the FCC says people in your state can apply, and then wait 3 or 4 or 5 years before you get the construction permit and are able to build. But all of the technology is easily understood, readily available, and like someone like Quinn can learn how to solder with someone watching her to make sure she doesn't like burn her eye out, and she can like build the console. Like, we had a 7-year-old doing it in Urbana, Illinois. So thank you guys so much for coming out.
Thank you all very much. I just wanted to make one quick comment, which is that Tom Rowe, who's here webcasting tonight's talk, first webcast from the sanctuary, will be here on April 10th with Wavefarm talking about new transmission technologies, webcasting, podcasting, low power time, and all that. So we'd like to have you back for that. Also, as Hannah said, not to, we operate on donations. The sanctuary is completely funded by donations. We're all volunteers. So, and we split the door with whoever comes here, so there's a jar there if you feel so inclined. Definitely sign up on our email list and pick up a copy of our schedule, because we've got a lot of great stuff. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, and appreciate you here.